Welcome to the latest episode of the Big Sky Boneheads podcast. Last week I said it was episode 51, and that's because I'm a public school kid. It was actually episode 50. This is episode 51, which means absolutely nothing to anybody. My name is Michael Gray. His name is Scott Hershey. We are joined by producer and host and award-winning TV personality, Jason Matzinger from Into High Country. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
No, man, as busy as you are, we appreciate you taking the time. You stay busy with the outdoor lifestyle is one thing, but when it's your business, it's a whole other thing. Let's start there. How did you get started doing outdoor TV? How's that begin?
Well, I mean, I'll try to make this as quick as possible. But it really started just at an early age with my dad and his friends. They had an old 8mm video camera. There was two minute reels of film that you could put on that video camera. There was no sound. And they would go out and kind of film each other. And I remember being a little kid and projecting those on the living room wall. We'd have to take like one of the pictures off the wall so we had enough room to project it onto kind of a clean space. And I don't know, it was just super impactful. And from the time I had a chance, you know, of course, video equipment evolved by the time I first started sort of filming. And at that point, it was around the time I was just getting into hunting. You know, I would follow my dad around and his friends and try to video them doing their thing. And of course, when I started hunting, you know, the same thing. And it just continued to slowly evolve. And I guided right out of high school on a big, beautiful ranch outside of Bozeman here and got to witness some incredible stuff. And it kind of pushed me that much more to want to be able to document it and show other people the stuff that I got to witness. And I mean, that was around the time that hunting TV was really starting to kind of become a thing. And there was a place to put it, you know? So that's kind of the long of the short of it, but that's how it started and kind of got me to where I am.
Growing up to be, growing up in Montana and being a kid who hunts and fishes and those things, I mean, that's same here. So I go back to remembering kind of the first times that I was able to watch hunting on TV. I mean, you'd watch fishing on TV once in a great while, you'd catch somebody fishing. And I remember Kurt Gowdy fly fishing on TV, but hunting on TV, hunting in a film, watching somebody else hunt wasn't like it is now. And it was very difficult to find those things. And when they did, it was a huge deal, and people like Eastman and the pioneers of that stuff were way ahead of their time. Now it seems like every hunter wants to film it. Everybody wants a TV show, and I know you're into like 16 seasons of your show, so you're kind of you kind of got lucky. I do feel like it was lucky to be one of the kind of early ones because there's so much competition now.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I can't imagine trying to do it starting out now, just because, like you say, there is so much competition. It would be a lot harder to try to separate from the crowd, kind of, you know, because there is so many platforms and it's hard to sort of you know, get a focused audience in any one place. Where when I first was getting going, you know, social media wasn't a thing that, you know, you were having to do. It was basically either print or television. YouTube was something that, you know, rarely you heard about. And of course, there wasn't all these online platforms and different places to kind of kick it out, you know. So I do feel fortunate for my timing of when I came into it, for sure. We were kind of joking. I was at the Archery Trade Association show this year and we're walking around and I'm just blown away by the number of new camouflage companies that are trying to launch that I've never heard of before. And I was actually walking around with a friend of mine named Jake Thole, who is my programming director at the Sportsman's Channel. And we were kind of walking around and he goes, what would you rather do right now? Try to launch a camouflage company or start a hunting TV show? And I was like, oh, geez, that was a great question. I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, timing was great. You know, it gave me a chance to do something different, tell a bigger story. You know, conservation wasn't something that people were talking about in hunting television or you know, through those channels. So, you know, I feel like it gave me a really good chance to tell those stories at a really good time as well. And yeah, for sure. I definitely feel lucky, but, you know, a lot of hard work has went into that, making the timing of all that work as well.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and Jason, so, it's got to create a lot of pressure too, because it's one thing when you know, if I look at my wife and go, all right, I'm going out hunting, and then I come back and nothing happened that day. Didn't get in any critters. I come back, I got to stand in my kitchen and do the walk of shame and go, no, I didn't get anything. I'm going to go take a shower. and I got to do that for an audience of one. You're out there making your living on filming these things, and success is not guaranteed when you go out there. How much pressure does this kind of job create?
You know, in the beginning, I definitely felt that pressure a little more. Like, I needed to perform. I needed to be at the best of my game and you know, always sort of make a successful hunt to try to, you know, not only make my partners feel happy about who they've decided to work with and partner with, but, you know, kind of prove to people why I have a TV show or whatever. And I was really just naive to the fact that, you know, I didn't have to do any of that as long as I was just doing what was true to myself and not trying to really chase anything. And, you know, through the years, I feel like I've really been able to sort of explain to my audience the real side of hunting. I mean, I show a lot of episodes where we walk away from a hunt. In fact, I'm working on a two-part episode right now where I don't end up getting anything, but there was so many just cool interactions and close calls and like fun moments that it's still an engaging show.
That would be my entire show. Every single episode, people would be like, is this guy ever going to kill anything? Is this, yeah, it would be short lived.
Jason's got Into High Country, Scott Hershey, and Coming Home Empty.
yeah. So it's one of those things where I feel like my audience and my viewers really appreciate just telling an honest and real story. And, you know, so nowadays I still put a lot of pressure on myself and I have a lot of personal goals I'm still, you know, chasing and everything. But I do find that I've found a lot of comfort through the years of just doing it how I want to do it and not doing it for anybody else. And that's really what people want to see anyway. And so, you know, to answer your question, I guess, is I don't really feel the pressure when I'm out there anymore. I know we're going to tell a great story, whether I walk away filling the tag or not. And there's going to be some cool kind of things to be learned and that kind of thing along the way. So, yeah, I don't feel that pressure as much as I used to in the beginning.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Reminisce Angus Beef, the absolute best beef in the state of Montana, being made at a ranch down in Dillon by Brian Massard. They formulate all of their cows for taste. They've been doing this for decades down there, and they make the best steaks, burgers, snack sticks, and other beef treats that you can imagine.
The best thing is you can get them anywhere, so you can get beef boxes. You can pick out the cuts you want. You can get those specialty meats, which include jerky and summer sausage. Yeah, the best jerky you'll ever have, by the way. All of the beef is bred for taste, and you can tell it every single time you have Reminis Angus beef. So pick out the beef you want and have it right at your door. It's easy to find. Just go to RemAngusBeef.com and get the best beef in Montana. And the ranch is located near Dillon, and it's a great Montana ranch. The best beef you'll have. RemAngusBeef.com. Going back to the beginning a little bit, Jason, there's a big difference, and I've never really tried it, and I know when you started out, it's one of the real things you have to overcome. There's a big difference between hunting and filming a hunt, and being able to hunt while you're filming, especially with cameramen, and if you have anybody else with you. What was it? Give us an idea, as hunters, give us an idea of kind of that challenge and what happens when you're out there, you're stalking animals, especially in a real situation on private land or on public land where you might have animals that have been hunted before, apart from like a fence situation. But give us an idea what that's like, taking some dudes along and trying to get this thing on film.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, first of all, when I, you know, first got going, of course, I couldn't afford a camera guy, and I had kind of self-taught myself how to self-film. And so for me, it was kind of getting on film what I could, when I could. And it was kind of like Survivor Man style of filming, you know, yeah. Like I would walk ahead on the trail and set the camera up on the tripod. And then I would walk back down the trail and put my backpack on. And then I would walk past the camera. And then I would get my backpack off, and then I would put my camera gear back on, and then I would, you know, do that kind of stuff and get as much as I possibly could, which I feel like gave me some great fundamentals as far as how to run the cameras, you know, the functionality of it, how to set up a shot, really, you know, get what I'm looking for when it comes to then turning around and sitting down and producing a show, because you really spot the gaps in what you're shooting to try to tell a good story. And so, you know, it makes you better as a videographer when you go out there and are trying to get what you need. So it kind of started there. But then, so for me, it was, I always had to put the hunt first, because if I put camera first when I was trying to self-film all the time, you know, I would never hardly get anything. So there was a lot of scenarios where, shoot, I would get the camera rolling and I would kind of set it down next to me to where you can just kind of see what I'm doing and then fill in the rest, you know. And as that evolved and I was able to like start to have camera guys along with me, I kind of took that same, I wanted to film super cinematic. But I also, in the moment of truth, like we work sometimes, you know, 20 plus days out there on a hunt to be successful. And I'm not the guy that's not going to take the shot if my camera guy isn't on it, you know, and I tell him that right off the bat, like, just so you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to work as hard to get you in position as I can. And if everything works out, we'll get as much film as we can. But if it comes down to it and you're not on it and it's the animal we've been after for the entire season, I'm shooting, you know, because that's real.
Yeah, like, it is. Right.
Once again, like I enjoy the process of filming and I like getting these really beautiful scenes and wildlife doing cool stuff out there. But in the, you know, I don't kind of feel a lot of pressure through the process of that either. I think, you know, after doing it 16 years, it becomes just kind of second nature to what you're doing out there. And because I don't put pressure on myself or the camera guys to make sure that we get the shot or this can't even make an episode kind of thing. You know, I don't feel the pressure in those moments either, really.
I'm trying to picture a guy on another ridge watching you originally go up the trail, set the camera down, go back, walk past it, go back to get it again. Guy's got binoculars going, what is this guy doing?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I got made fun of plenty from people I've never met.
Well, here's the thing. My head went to the same place, but that's because when I'm out hunting, I can see other people. I can watch other trucks. I very rarely see any of the things that I'm actually out hunting. So I've become an excellent people watcher, which just says everything about the fact that I'm hunting in the wrong places. Jason, I'm looking at some of your recent videos, and of course, it's a Western-focused show into high country, but you're also, you're showing up in places like, is it Illinois? Most recently, with some footage out of the Midwest, are there places?
That was Ohio.
Ohio.
Yep.
What states outside of Montana have you found that you really, really enjoy?
I feel like every state I've ever been to and hunted for something, I've really, really enjoyed it. But I have some buddies that live in Ohio, and we have a farm out there that we hunt. So I've gone out there for the last couple Novembers chasing whitetails. I typically go down to Texas at some point during the spring and bow hunt free range axis deer and oddad down there. I was able to take my first axis last year, and then I still haven't taken an oddad, so still trying to make that one happen. But, I just got back from Patagonia. Me and a buddy went down there and bow hunted free-range red stag. That was insane. One of the most amazing adventures I've ever been on. I try to do one big adventure somewhere outside of Montana at least once a year, and then the rest, I really enjoy sticking close to home and just hunting the same areas I have for years. And now my boys are my one boy is 16, so he's been old enough to hunt for a couple of years, but my youngest is just gonna turn 10 here next week, and so he'll be able to do the youth apprentice thing. So this time in my life, I'm trying to focus more on kind of reeling back some of that stuff, kind of like trip to trip sort of style, and just being here for the boys and making sure, I have the time to take them out when they have the time, mixed with football and school and everything else.
So with the all the adventures you just talked about, you're going to Patagonia, you're all over different states and after different species. At some point this had to change from filming your hunts around Bozeman into going, and now you're filming outside of Bozeman. Now you're filming your show's growing, you're having success. What is your typical year look like now? How many weeks out of the year are you hunting? How many weeks out of the year do you spend producing the shows? And how much free time do you have?
As far as weeks hunting, I usually come home at least every other weekend for 4 days to be with my boys during hunting season. But other than that, I'm gone steady from, middle of August to at least the end of November. And, coming back for football games or Christmas programs and my weekends with the boys and that kind of stuff. But I don't even know if I were to break it down in weeks, because then there's the spring seasons. And as far as production of the show, I would say that's about figuring out commercial spots and the actual production and everything wrapped around it, from delivering to the network and closed captioning and show descriptions and all that. That's probably about a 4 month start to finish process all in all. Just because I do most of the editing on my own here as well.
Jason, you bring up an interesting challenge, and this is something that you're probably in a unique position to talk about, because it's something I'm going through. My boy's about to turn 13. I'm getting him involved in fishing and hunting, and there are challenges now for parents trying to get kids into the field that just didn't exist when I was growing up, with all of the sports and all of the travel and all of the time that goes into spring and fall seasons, when typically outdoor activities are, that's when they're going to happen. How do you manage that with letting the kids have the room to do the things that they want to do, but knowing that if you're going to include that outdoor activity and you're going to do things like hunting and fishing, that it's time intensive and that you can't wrap up a season in a Saturday afternoon because somebody had it free?
Right. Well, I don't know, other than you do the best you can with every weekend you get the chance is really the best answer I have, because it's just so different every weekend. My situation's a little different. I'm no longer married, and I have two boys with two different mothers, and I get them every other weekend. So for me, having their mothers there to help out is a huge part of what kind of helps bridge the gap when I'm gone personally. But when it comes to getting them out there, it's definitely tough. It can be a juggle to make it happen. Sometimes, like, my boy's got an away football game or something, and I'll grab my youngest son and my dad and we'll go watch his away football game, and we will only have 2 days to go look for an antelope or something like that, and that may be all we get. But the way I look at it is, when it comes to playing like super in like sports through being in school, is that's just such a short time that I want to give them the opportunity to do everything they can in those sports, get them out when I can, and, just have faith that when they get out of school, we'll have much more time to kind of circle back and get after it.
This episode of the podcast brought to you by Reminisce Angus Beef. I encourage you to go to remangusbeef.com and read their story. You can find out all about Brian Massard and the ranch down in Dillon, Montana, and how they got started breeding cows for taste. It sounds simple, but it's not something that a lot of people do, and it results in the best tasting beef that you can find anywhere, not just here in Montana, but anywhere in the country. He supplies 4-star restaurants around the nation with the best steaks, burgers, and beef treats that you can find.
Bread for flavor. You can see it when you get the cuts, whether it's a steak or stew meat or the specialty meats. It all tastes different. It all tastes better. And it's been chosen by some of the finest chefs in the country at Vail Resorts, places like the Yellowstone Club, and they have chosen it by taste. Get it delivered right to your door. That's the best part. Just pick out the cuts you want. You can get beef boxes. You can get an entire beef if you'd like. Just go to remangusbeef.com. Now, Jason, with those boys, I'm kind of picturing a situation where you got young boys who are obviously going to be interested in hunting and doing the things that that dad's been doing, and that's the way I was. Unfortunately for me, I was raised by the world's worst elk hunter, and I became the world's worst elk hunter. So I'm picturing your kids. How do you teach them kind of the work side of it and the research in that, when you've done so much that you have the ability to go out and probably be a couple of steps ahead of the average hunter on these things? How do you, I just saw a recent post. I saw some people discussing the fact that some of the best hunting ranches, some of the best ranches in Montana that have just they're overrun with elk, will open up to some kids. And it's kind of like teaching them that it's easy, and teaching them you go out and you shoot an elk from these locations where nobody else has access to. And then suddenly at some point they're going to have to work for it, and it might discourage them. How do you find that balance with your boys?
Well, it's kind of an interesting dynamic with my boys, because my ex-wife's family is a big cattle ranching family over in the Shields Valley. So when I was married to her, we actually lived on a big ranch, and they have elk and deer and moose and different stuff. And even though it was a family ranch, it wasn't like a, you know, something that was an easy hunting scenario, because her father would allow hunting to several other people. And like you say, a lot of times fathers with kids and or mothers, whatever, whoever stopped and asked. And so he had the opportunity to and has had the opportunity to hunt private, but it's never been, you know, something that's come super easy. In fact, he just got his first elk this year. You know, we've been after it for a while. So, you know, with my kids, it's a little different, because we do get some opportunity there, as well as some other private opportunities here. But to them, it's still, you know, it's probably not what a lot of people picture when they think private land, like Ted Turner's ranch or, you know, something like that. It's you're still working hard for it. And those animals still very much know they're being hunted. And it's kind of a bounce between public and private a lot of times. And, you know, for them, I just sort of really instill the conservation side of things. Like, you know, why, what is their role of being out there? And why is that animal the right one to take, whether it's an old, you know, dry cow or a mature buck, or, you know, why are whitetail a better species to take when you're meat hunting versus mule deer? And why are their, you know, their species different in that regard, and all that kind of stuff. So teaching them hunting, but at the same time, really trying to teach them our role kind of as stewards while we're out there, and sort of what repercussions that has, positive and negative.
And what kind of response do you get? I've got to believe that somebody that's putting their experience out there, your personal approach to something that people take as seriously as they do hunting, you've got to get, I would imagine, just a buttload of feedback on what people think, both positive and negative. How do you manage that?
I mean, you're talking overall, just the messaging and sort of what we're out there doing and stuff like that. I think, you know, you just kind of take a balance of it and try to, you know, figure out, you know, if you're hearing a lot more positive than negative, then, you know, you're doing something right. If all of a sudden you start to hear a lot of complaining about one thing or the other, then, which, you know, I've never really experienced that, but you do have the complainers from time to time that feel like they know more than you, or they think you're doing it wrong in some way, unethically in their mind, even if it is a legal form of hunting. And so how do I deal with it is really, you know, I try not to let the people who I feel like I can't engage in a solid conversation with and walk away, you know, with something meaningful, I try not to get too engaged with. There's some comments that start out really negative, but they bring up points and I can tell they're trying to learn. And if I take the time to sort of respond to them in a good manner, we end up in a great conversation and they walk away super enlightened and, you know, thank me for taking the time. So, you know, it's kind of a balance of just figuring out what's worth the time and where you might help somebody understand something, or where somebody's just kind of being radical and throwing hate, you know?
Well, Jason, we're you know, I watch a lot of hunting shows, and there's a kind of a different style. There's a different, I think people find their lane, find what they do to get their following. Some of those being, I mean, there's guys who are based down south. There's guys who do southern hunting with food plots and raising deer and all those things. There's also guys who go all over the globe. They do exotic things. There's people out there specializing things like throwing spears at animals. Where do you feel, because watching your show and watching the show that I do, I identify best with people who hunt basically like I do, where I do. Those are the ones that I like to watch. Other people like to watch things that they won't do. They like to watch watch people go after animals in Africa that they'll never have a chance to do. But where do you get the best response from people? Where do you get the most mileage out of getting a big audience? Which parts of your show do you think resonate and keep you successful after all these seasons?
Like I said, I think overall, just kind of not feeling the pressure, hunting for the right reasons, not shooting an animal on the last day because you feel like you got to make a show. Like, I hunt for the animals that get me my heart rate so stoked that, like, I don't know whether to grab my binoculars or my knock an arrow or whatever. Like, I want to hunt for those animals that get me excited. And if I don't find them, I just don't pull the trigger or shoot. And, I think that's one thing that's kind of helped the show find longevity is just being realistic. I think the family aspect of it, I get a lot of compliments on shows where I've hunted with my dad and his friends or, when I take my boys out and we're doing stuff, that seems to really resonate with people. I think whether it's public or private, because, we do a fair mix of both, whether it's here in Montana or just nationwide. I think the do-it-yourself thing is something that is realistic to people. I mean, I go on guided hunts and I've got great friends who are guides. Some places you have to use them to hunt. But I think that, to your point, hunts that you feel like you can go on and do are something that people like to watch. But, and the conservation aspect, I think that adding that aspect into every episode and helping people fall in love with the animal species that we're hunting and the habitats they live in and trying to help explain why it's important, that we get involved. And like I said, with my kids, explaining what our role is kind of within that. I think that and one formula that I've always used with the show, I just thought of this is, I use 50% of my thought process in what would a diehard, been there, done that type hunter love to watch and appreciate. And 50% of if somebody was just flipping through the channels and turned this on for the first time, and maybe say it had a buddy invite them to go hunting and they, for the first time, were kind of like open their eyes to the thought of hunting and they turned my show on, would they walk away going, man, that was like really entertaining and looked like a lot of fun and something I might enjoy doing? Or would they watch 10 minutes of it and be so off put by what they're seeing, they never have a second thought? And so I really try to use that balance of somebody coming in and trying to learn and soak it up, but also a guy that's been there 1,000 times, and what will both of them appreciate?
And that's gotta be a tough balance to strike, Jason. Do you think that the audience is it constricting or is it expanding for outdoor television, outdoor content, things of this nature?
I mean, to this point, I haven't seen anything too constricting. The show's as big as it's ever been in 16 seasons. We have more reach than I've ever had in 16 seasons. between the U.S. and Canada, and geez, worldwide, even with platforms like YouTube and things like that. So, you know, we're getting, I think, a little bit restricted in ways like when it comes to social media or what we can show and where in the aspects of like firearms or, you know, that kind of thing. But so far, I haven't felt that a ton, I guess.
I feel like the West has kind of caught up to what was going on in, and especially the South, in hunting shows, because it used to be that I would turn on any of the platforms that provide content of hunting shows, and I would watch mostly whitetails, mostly turkeys. That was the what they were showing 90% plus of the time, and now I can catch shows that are based in the West or hunting in the West and get a little bit of a balance between both, so I kind of feel like you're one of the guys who was early on in that, and I feel like that trend is almost evened out between the type of shows and the regions that they appeal to.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, that was kind of one of the things that inspired me to get into it to begin with, as well as when I was guiding and out there and having these incredible experiences with elk coming in and like getting bluff charged by bears and just crazy stuff, you know, that I would see on the regular out there that I wanted to share. And you know, like I said, one of the things that inspired me was that when I would turn on the TV, there wasn't a lot of that. And what there was for the most part kind of, there just wasn't a great representation of it overall. You know, the Realtree guys would come out every now and then and hunt elk or, and obviously I'm not knocking anybody when I say this stuff. I mean, they're the pioneers of it. Like you said, the Eastmans,
right.
Gordon Eastman was one of my icons. You know, I really looked up to Gordon Eastman and still work closely and am friends with the Eastmans today. And Marty Stauffer, you know, Wild America, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I think part of that is for two reasons. I think that camera gear has become a lot more transportable and easy and smaller to pack around in the hills to capture some of this big wild stuff, where you look at the stuff that Gordon Eastman was doing in some of those early films, and he's got a big old wooden tripod that looks like an old surveying tripod and a camera that is the size of our backpacks now. And he's having to hike that stuff up into the mountains to film sheep. I mean, there just wasn't a lot of guys that dedicated or who had the means to get their hands on that gear to do it back then, or had the foresight.
Yeah, by the way, the grizzly, the charge, the bluff part charge of the bear, although it's got to be absolutely incredibly frightening, is the money shot of all hunting shows. You really, they will show that. It doesn't matter which show it is. That is a, you know, you got it then, because that thing is going to be reused over and over and over again. And it's absolutely terrifying. But every, if you can, you got to be after the filming process, go, we got it.
You know, as many times as I've been bluff charged through my life, I've never once actually been filming when it's happened. So I've never got the glory shot, although I've had the shitting of the pants part of it numerous times.
No kidding. Well, one more thing for you, Jason, and that is, you know, we've had him on the show. John McClelland has been on the podcast. We're trying to get both guys, but it's such a kind of a nod to Bozeman that you use El Wencho music in your show. I just absolutely love it. And to be honest with you, that's what first caught my attention as I was going through, and I'm like, that's El Wencho. And to hear the music on there, I think it's so cool to kind of take the hometown boys and use them.
Oh, you bet. Those guys have been great to work with, and their music brings a great vibe to the show. I've gotten so many compliments, whether it's online or through email or whatever, just about their music and how to find it, and It's been great working with those guys. I do a hunter harvest barbecue every year out in my field. That's like a big potluck for wild game. And we have several different cooking units where people can come out and either cook their wild game and share it, or obviously they can bring it cooked. Or we also have two or three chefs that will come out and do some cooking for us, or take your game and cook it. And I set up wall tents and get, you know, the fires going. And this year we're having El Wencho come out and be the band. They were the band a couple years ago. And I talked to Josh here a few weeks ago and got him on board to come out and do it again. So should be a good time.
And Jason, real quick, for people that follow you and watch Into High Country, what have they got to look forward to? No spoilers or anything, but you know, what have you got coming up?
Well, I'm currently editing season 16, which is hard to believe, but we've got some really good stuff for that season. Kind of hunted. Went on my first elk hunt in New Mexico. I've dreamed to hunt New Mexico for elk during the rut for a long time, and with some friends was able to make it happen last September. And the last hour of the last day, ended up getting a bull. My buddy called him into like 7 yards, and we got some really cool stuff there. That was a fun hunt. And went to Mexico for mule deer, Patagonia for red stag. Last year was a big year for me. I had planned a lot of trips that all kind of came to a head last year just because of weird schedule stuff. So for this season, I think you've got to look forward to a lot of hunts from sort of all over.
Jason, thank you so much for taking the time. We do appreciate it. Make sure you find him. We will include all of the show links to his Facebook page, to his homepage, to his Instagram. You can see all of the photos and everything that he's doing there on Sportsman's Channel. And Jason, thanks so much for the time, bud.
You bet. Thank you, guys.